Hello, and welcome back to the Spark Salon podcast. I'm Jim Bly. I'm Corporate Affairs Director here at TCS in the UK and Ireland, and your host for this podcast. We're recording this edition from the TCS headquarters on Kensington High Street. For anyone listening for the first time to this podcast, or for any who may have forgotten, the Spark Salon is TCS's programme of events that highlights innovative and thought-provoking new perspectives on the role of technology in helping to create a more sustainable world. At our events, we have a number of speakers give a TED-style talk about the theme, and through podcasting, we're able to share these events with you and showcase our expert speakers and their brilliant ideas. Today, we're wrapping up our Spark Salon series on how technology is influencing democracy by looking in more depth at 21st century governance models and why we need a systemic shift to protect democracy in the future. Sushant Zanganepour is our final speaker today. He's the founder of Vancouver-based technology startup Sway, a digital platform combining anonymity, AI, and collective intelligence to help users influence the decision-making process. Without any further ado, please enjoy him speaking at TCS's Spark Salon in June, Brave New Digital Worlds, the Influence of Technology on Democracy.
Twelve years ago, I was an intern at the UN teaching inner city students from New York the rules of the international game, really about diplomacy, about foreign policy, and how we brokered solutions at the international level. Fast forward 10 years from then, 2 years ago, I went back with some colleagues to brief different leaders of the member states about something called the rise of exponential technology and what those technologies were going to do to their institutions. The message we were trying to drive home was that they're going to face a crisis of legitimacy very soon, and that the only action is to adapt very quickly to this. So over these 10 years, 12 years I'd say, the nature of our problems have changed. The scale of them has changed. Our culture has changed. Things have accelerated. But the tools we have for problem solving have really stayed the same. Take issues like climate change, inequality, the migration crisis. These are systemic political problems resulting from a much more interconnected world, which means something happening somewhere results in externality somewhere else. And the governance system we have doesn't really have the solutions to account for these types of things. So they're growing and growing and growing. Right now, we have man-made problems that threaten our future survival, and these are game-over problems. Like, if we don't get them right, you know, bad news for us, for all of us. But the governance system we have focused on the national interests of nations and their sovereignty doesn't really produce solutions at scale. So that's a really pessimistic story. Let me tell you a different story about something a bit more optimistic, about the rise of exponential technologies. And these technologies are things that are supported by something called Moore's Law, or the law of accelerating returns. And what this means is they're improving in performance and reducing in cost every 18 months. So every 18 months, they're getting faster or better and cheaper. And this is like processing power, microchips, robotics, synthetic biology, etc., etc. If I take 30 exponential steps, so 2 to 4, 4 to 8, 8 to 16, 16 to 32 to 64, 64 to 128, then 128 to 16,384. That's a huge leap. And these are getting exponentially increasing. So I will do 36 or 26 laps around the world in 30 exponential steps. So why does this matter? You have a bunch of these technologies that are getting to a stage where they're converging and they're powerful enough that we can start to imagine new applications. So you take sensors and software processing power and robotics, and you get self-driving cars. That's really awesome, because it frees us of random things, but it also disrupts entire industries, the taxi industry, the trucking industry, and our governance systems don't really have solutions for these, nor are they coming up with them fast enough that these problems are, or these solutions are being created. So this rise of exponential technologies is really challenging every paradigm we've had. The pace of the breakthroughs have had no historical precedent before. Let's take data, for example. So data is also on these exponential curves. And if you project out 10 years from now, with all the devices that we're going to have, that experts believe we'll have, the amount of data we're going to produce every 12 hours is going to double. So just imagine you're in charge of a small council or a city or CEO of a company, and the data that you use to make a number of decisions on has changed or updated every 12 hours. How are you going to process that? As we have more data, people's expectation that data is used for decision-making improves, and their individual power increases as well. But it's really eerie. You know, we have this like really interesting and exciting time, and we're at the nexus of two things moving in different directions at different velocities. The technical or technological world getting smarter, faster, cheaper, and our governance world, our physical world, reacting against fear, you know, fear of change, migration, disruptive economic growth, et cetera, et cetera. And the consequence is this: as everything is accelerating and our ability to react to them is linear, or the ability of the institutions we've designed is linear, you have this growing democratic trust deficit or performance deficit or just people being really pissed off about how things work. So you sort of know where I'm going with this. Electing more leaders that claim to have better policies doesn't really address the root of the types of problems we're seeing. The types of problems we're seeing need systemic solutions. We need a different system for this, right? Also, electing more individuals based on a paradigm of hierarchies, representation, centralization, means that we only get to choose the types of decisions they came up with. And what if they don't act in our best interest, as we're seeing around a lot of other issues? What's also changed tremendously is the communications era we were in. The system of democracy representation was really novel 2,000 years ago, maybe even 200 years ago, when the cost of communicating was really high. You had to physically go somewhere to deliberate and discuss. And to do that, you needed a horse or you needed some form of transport. And so you would elect somebody else to go do this for you. And they would come back with the news and inform you about this. We don't live in those days anymore, right? Everything is digitalized. Everything is accelerated. Everything is digitally enabled. And with that, the more and more we interact with digital devices, whether it's commerce or transport, we just expect them to be the basis upon which we make decisions, right? So some symptoms that we're seeing as a result of this, right now, you know, people are quite dissatisfied with the performance of their democratic institutions. Levels of trust are at all-time lows. This was an Edelman Trust Barometer 2 years ago. It's been updated since, but this one was really striking because across every institution that they surveyed, trust levels were below 50% for the first time ever, meaning that they didn't believe that these institutions could do what was right or could react fast enough. More worrying is millennials. These guys are the potentially largest voting population in the next few years in many countries and the largest portion of the labor force in many years. And they don't believe the system works. They don't vote, right? Because they don't believe their vote reflects the interests that they have. So you see what? The rise of political movements and protest movements demanding alternatives to this, whether it's Occupy or what's going on in the Sudan or etc. So what I'm trying to say is, sprinkling some technology or a few different leaders, that they're good, but they're not enough because the gap is getting bigger at a rate that we're not responding fast enough to. So what's the solution? It's really, look, if we believe that these things are going to happen, we're going to have much more of these advances and these technologies are growing at this kind of pace and level, then let's imagine the world that we're going to be in the next 15, 20, 30, 50 years from now, and start designing systems for that, right? The same way we made the leap from analog to digital, we have to do that with our institutions. There are certain baggage that we carry with them that we don't need in the future. And I think there are three things that we need to do. One is we need radical inclusion, but not just noise. We need that inclusion to be augmented by technology. People need to use advanced technologies like AI to help better express their ideas, better package their ideas, better represent their ideas. And we need to use things like collective intelligence to weed out the good from the bad. Second, we need access to advanced technologies to de-risk those ideas. So imagine you take a well-vetted idea from this group and you put it into a simulator or some AI that shows you the potential impacts of this idea, the unintended consequences that you haven't thought of based on the data sets that it has access to, so that you don't implement things that you don't know how they're going to work. Call it expertise as a service or whatever you like. But that needs to be democratized, so we have different types of solutions that are being created. Third, we need the ability to be able to change those if the way that they're being implemented don't really live up to the standards we have in mind. So using sensors, IoT, other things, we can collect data on a regular basis and see how things are actually performing and make course corrections based on real-world impacts. This is, you know, the vision I have for Sway, for the company I founded 2 years ago. And we've started to implement aspects of this, particularly the beginnings of it, in companies and in some cities in South America. We're very far from getting to this vision, but the trajectory is clear for us. This is a whole-scale alternative to same old, same old. I told you at the beginning of the talk that I was at the UN, and I went there because I studied political science and international relations. I grew up thinking that the route to change would be to become a leader or a policymaker. And I think that all the changes I've seen tell me otherwise, that the best thing anyone could probably do is try to imagine and try to create alternatives to our system, stuff that's a little bit better and built for the future, something that will help us make a leap away from just electing charismatic leaders to selecting the right solutions to the problems we have, processes and whatnot. Take this noise and try to make it into productive inputs into the problems that we face. And I think, you know, we're entering a phase where we haven't been before. There are no doctrines to sort of lean back on. We should use all of our imagination. The question I want to leave you with is, what happens if we don't? What should our democracies or our systems look like if we know this sort of stuff is inevitable? And what happens if we don't?
Thank you very much for a fascinating talk at the Spark Salon. I wanted to start off with a question about what day-to-day life might look like in your new governance model if we introduce these types of governance structures that you talk about in the talk.
Let's project out 10 years from now, the city of Barcelona. A group of architects and urban planners and average citizens are frustrated by the traffic, the amount of pollution is in the city. And they use a platform, a digital platform like ours, to come up with a different traffic management system that has some policy changes and some behavioral changes into it. They put this back on the platform for everybody else to opine on, to critique, to support. And the combination of metrics, as well as some simulation of the impacts of this, would give us a pretty good understanding of what it might look like if it was to be implemented. No longer would someone who's frustrated or a user of government services or a program have to wait until someone has the impetus to act. They could use a platform like this to at least seed the ideas that change is needed and build political will as well as technical de-risking of an idea on the digital platforms that I'm talking about.
Part of the challenge here is starting a deep culture change and trying to bring people
100%.
With you. How would you engage citizens? Do you think they're engaged enough already to start on a model like this?
I'm glad I said 10 years from now, because it probably will take that long to engineer the cultural change that's required to even appreciate something like this. So where you start is not in cities. You start in the least maybe politically sensitive areas and more practical areas of life, like associations, housing councils, companies, places where decision-making is happening regularly and there's a spectrum of different types of decisions that are being made. This type of model needs to be de-risked and it needs to be reinforced so people appreciate its effectiveness over delegated authority.
Thinking about democracy itself, obviously we had a referendum on Brexit 3 years ago now, and that's an example of direct democracy in action. But when representative democracy has come into it, with the House of Commons trying to implement what's called the will of the people from the referendum, there have been tensions, and the understanding or misunderstanding what the direct democracy was about and what the message was that was coming from the people and so on. Do you think that's one of the challenges going forward with your model? But do you also think that there's an existential threat to representative democracy under a system where billions of people have an individual voice and more power?
Brexit was a canary in a coal mine. I think what you're seeing is a problem-product match in a number of different countries, from Bolsonaro in Brazil to the latest president in Mexico to the guy in the Philippines and so on and so forth. People are frustrated by the lack of voice they have in the systems that they're a part of, and they're willing to be captured by the most simple answers to those problems.
But that requires people to have quite a sophisticated level of understanding of the data that they're looking at. How do we get people to improve their understanding of information?
So just to step back a little bit, I don't think that what I'm proposing is a wholesale replacement of our model with direct democracy aided by some technology. I think there's a fundamental important layer of expertise that's required to vet the degree to which these ideas that people are coming up with are relevant. And I think you can do that with a combination of technology and experts. I just think our complete reliance on representation is fueling a lot of the resentments that we see that other opportunists are capturing and fueling.
It's amazing how quickly we've seen change in the last 5 years with politicians themselves and with individuals making decisions. That seems to me that there'll be, you know, day-to-day decisions that individuals could take that would affect the course of the next few years under a model like this. Taking a global perspective for a moment, how do you see these governance changes being implemented globally? Do you think there are different challenges and different types of system that exist today?
They are. I think the most interesting area for me, I mean, people are experimenting with using a system like this as a Trojan horse for a new political party, saying we are just representatives of the people, you figure it out. It's happening in Australia, they're trying to do it in South America. Where I'm most interested in is our global commons, the oceans, air, things that are not owned by nations, are not owned by anybody. And a system like this could provide some degree of sovereignty to individuals to collectively decide what should be done about the oceans, what should be done about air quality.
So skipping forward 100 years then, from your 10 years in Barcelona, what are we looking at?
I think that a lot of the decision-making we do make can be delegated to AI. It can probably understand us much closer than others and would do it in a much more efficient way. I think that the creativity and the agency must rest with humans. Otherwise, we're going to delegate ourselves out of existence. We have to have a role, and it has to be a consequential role.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Seashon. Now over to Ved Sen, digital evangelist at TCS, to provide a tartar take on experimentation, possible solutions, and the future of democracy. Over to you, Ved.
After listening to all the other speakers, Sushant's session really made me think about the need for experimentation in this whole space of the evolution of democracy. And although it sounds a bit playful, I think it really has merit. Because the scenario we've got today is that the world has become really complex. We are trying to evaluate what is the impact of something like Brexit on the financial industry or the automotive industry or on the demand and supply of specific types of labor across the economy. And those are really complex issues. It's almost like we are trying to vote on the Big Bang Theory and whether the universe was started in one way or the other. And that can't be a popular vote. We know that even the experts are flummoxed at this point of time by some of the challenges we are facing. That very definition of an economist, they say, is someone who explains how the world will behave and then tells you why it didn't happen that way. So, you know, there's not much hope for the rest of us. But we are still reliant on what essentially is a 200-year-old system of voting to somehow give us these great outcomes in terms of the people who should run the country and the way in which they should do that. And while it's really hard to change a political environment or a system like democracy, again, Sushant's conversation suggested that it might be interesting to borrow a leaf from the playbook of the corporate innovation environments and say, could we create something like a lab? In that lab, could we construct a few experiments that might show us what might work better as we tweak around the edges of the democratic process? A simple example that comes to mind is that of apple pie. We know that apple pie is one of the most popular desserts, but it turns out that apple pie isn't the most popular flavor of pie. It is the most popular because it comes in a family pack. It's actually everybody's second favorite. And so it's the one that gets bought most often because you can't buy the one you want specifically. Now, if I extrapolate from there, it might be interesting to think about what would happen if we voted for two people instead of one person on a ballot, and then we counted who's everybody's second choice, and would that person be a better candidate as a consensus for governing a country? These are interesting questions, especially in the age of polarization, as we call it now. But whether that is the answer or not isn't the point really here. It might be a really bad idea, but unless you start experimenting and trying a few things and tweaking them, you end up with a system that's been around for 200 years and any system that's been around for very long can be systematically beaten. An example of which is gerrymandering in the US, where you redraw the lines of constituencies so that the left and the right will always win their elections because you've traded off people across those constituencies to give each other the wins that you need. So we think that there's certainly scope for tweaking in a controlled way and experimenting to discover what might be a better way of handling these incredibly complex issues instead of just chucking it over to the people and saying, hey, you decide. Because we know that in the complex world we live in, with the number of unintended consequences that often have global impacts, it's really important that we get this right.
Thank you, Bed.
Well, we're at the end of our third Spark Salon series, Brave New Digital Worlds, The Influence of Technology on Democracy. We've covered a huge amount of ground on the future of digital democracy. Sushant's model for 21st century governance seems all the more urgent, considering the fraught state of our current politics. I hope we can start to see these changes in decision-making models within smaller institutions in the near future. Now, normally, this is my chance to tell you all about the next series, but the Spark Salon team and I are taking a short break over the summer before returning with our next event and series. To make sure you don't miss out on future episodes, the easiest way to stay in touch with us is to rate, review, and subscribe to the Spark Salon podcast. While you're waiting for the new series, why not pass on what you've learned and recommend us to your friends, colleagues, family members, or anyone who needs a spark of new knowledge to improve their day. Until next time, it's goodbye from me and the team. I'm Jim Bly, and this has been the Spark Salon Podcast.